Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up with you? Doug Gottlieb Show. 5 o'clock on the East Coast. Woo, woo. Woo, woo. It's the weekend. What up with you? We got a great third hour of the show, including my picks. So I'm digging in my nose there for all my picks. Oh, we got a lot to get to. Last night, Dodgers outlasted the Giants, which gives us Dodgers, Braves, old school NL West. Like, we got three old NL West teams in here. God, I'm getting old. Anybody else? Lohenkron is like the oldest young man. He's actually only 15, but very well educated for 15. But you got to, if you like, you're, this is one of those things, Jay, we're about the same age, right? So we're old enough to remember when the Dodgers, the Braves, and the Astros were all in the NL West. That used to happen.
Fulton County Stadium.
Fulton County Stadium.
Those were the days.
And then they were really, really, really good. And I think sometime when they were really, really good, the West Coast team's like, yeah, we don't want to fly that far. Let's get them away from our division.
And Cincinnati was in the National League West, and Milwaukee was in the American League, and American Houston League. Was in the National League.
Houston was in the National League. Yes, it was. They had Nolan Ryan, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, crazy night. We'll get to the check swing. Was it a strike? Was it not a swing? We'll have that argument. I got my picks this hour, college and pro, five of each. Let's welcome in Rich Ornberger, though. Rich, of course, a former NFL lineman. He's the host of Fox Football Sunday on Fox Sports Radio between 1 to 5. That leads you up to Dan Beyer, which is great. So you're basically, this is what your sound is going to be like on a Sunday. Rich, let's start with last night. Brady's now throwing out the, forget 40 or 45. How about 50 or 55? Last night was pretty easy for him. But what do you think? Like, what do you think is the point at which he walks away?
Boy, I don't know. And thanks for having me on, Doug. I think I look at Tom Brady as being such an aberration from the norm. And we know in other sports, in this sport, there have been guys who sort of defied the test of time. So it's uncommon in that it doesn't happen all that often, but it has happened. So there's proof that he can still do it. If you watch last night's game, there's no discernible drop off in his performance that you can point to. He's had the absolute benefit of playing behind good to great offensive lines his entire career. It seems to be one of the calling cards of a Tom Brady team is a dominant offensive line. So yeah, man, I'm with him. Whatever he says goes. If he wants to play to 50, I'm going to pop some popcorn and watch him until then.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, let's get to the Gruden thing. What was your reaction when you saw those emails?
Well, I mean, it was stomach-turning stuff. Obviously, when you read words like that, the first thought is it just seems so out of place in today's verbal
society.
Lexicon,
yeah.
you feel like you're reading something from the 1930s or 1940s, like when, you know, there was just less scrutiny around people parsing their words carefully and frankly, different sentiments about race and gender. And so it's just bizarrely, I don't even know what to say. It's out of place for the time. And I thought that when the first emails were released and it was, a week ago and it was Friday and it was using racially derogatory terms to describe the executive director of the NFLPA and DeMaurice Smith, I mean, that was stomach turning enough. But then come Monday, right before Monday Night Football, the release of those other emails with, all sorts of other biases. I mean, my reaction was absolutely stomach turning, and there's no place in society for words like that anymore.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Who can fix it?
Well, Mike Mayock is certainly a leader. I was impressed with how he handled himself on the fallout of all this. Mike Mayock comported himself better than I could have ever imagined a general manager handling such a unique situation. There has never been a general manager in the history of the NFL who had to respond to what he had to respond to. And the words he chose and the way he presented himself and the way he stood by his players, I thought was a pretty good start. You know, and football is an interesting sport. It's a really resilient sport, and the players specifically, because, you know, you could see a horrific injury at practice. I mean, a career-ending injury. And, you know, somebody will move the ball up 10 yards and the practice continues. You know, I mean, you could have all sorts of tragedy on the outside. I mean, players have lost children, for crying out loud, and continued to play throughout a regular season or into the postseason. I mean, football players are incredibly resilient people, and it's because you create such a bond inside the locker room, and it's such a brotherhood. So I think Mike Mayock, you know, using his leadership, Rich Bisaccia, who's been heralded as a great leader in that locker room, if they rally these guys, I mean, it could be a special season for the Raiders on the heels of, you know, a really disgusting public mockery that John Gruden dragged them through.
Rich Hornberger is our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. All right, those emails are sent to Washington. And Washington all of a sudden yesterday goes like, oh, hey, we got Sean Taylor's jersey's going to be retired on Sunday. Come, everybody. Everybody celebrate. As a former player who played when Sean was playing, what do you think?
Yeah, it's bizarre timing. It's frankly, it's shameful that it hasn't been done sooner. And it's bizarre timing having it be so close to, you know, because look, on the other side of the Gruden emails was Bruce Allen. And, you know, more and more as the thread is getting pulled from this sweater, we're finding out some of the things that he was responsible for in his correspondences and the type of furthering the story of the toxic culture that was created and honed in Washington for many years. So, yeah, the timing of this jersey retirement is positively bizarre and should have been done much, much sooner.
Okay, I want to ask you about the Chargers. Everybody is falling all over themselves for Justin Herbert. Are you?
I am, yeah. I mean, Justin Herbert is one of the most composed football players in the NFL, and the guy's played, I mean, less than 20 games. He's unbelievable. He really is. Actually, he's a tick over 20 now, but he is unbelievable. This guy now holds the record for 300-yard passing games over the first 2 years of his career, and he's got 12 more games to play. I mean, they've put so much on his shoulders his rookie year, filling in for Tyrod Taylor, who was the announced starter at the beginning of the season, and then taking over as the starter, and into this season. I mean, that whole offense runs through him. Joe Lombardi doesn't have the restrictor plates on. The offensive coordinator, who was the quarterback's coach with Drew Brees in New Orleans, he's now calling plays for this Chargers offense and really hasn't missed a beat. I mean, he has that Brees or Phillip Rivers or, you know, dare I say Tom Brady's-esque composure this young in his career, and he's got some real intangible physical ability to back it up. I'm amazed by him.
What about Mahomes? What's going on there?
You know, through the first 5 weeks of this NFL season, Mahomes is the least blitzed quarterback in the NFL. All right, so 12.6% of his dropbacks, he's facing pressure. And he just looks impatient to me. He's trying to make things happen that the defense isn't allowing. You know, you turn on Thursday Night Football last night, and the Bucs offense sometimes looks a little boring. You know what I mean? You know, they're taking what the defense is giving them, and Tom Brady is throwing, you know, these 8-yard routes to tight ends like Cameron Brate, but it's just so unbelievably effective. You know, when you're sitting in the pocket and the defense is rushing 4 or they're rushing 3 and there's no hot route and there's no amazing evasive play that Patrick Mahomes needs to make, and he just needs to check the ball down. Well, he just needs to check the ball down. I think he's becoming impatient with what defenses are giving to him, and he needs to lock it in and realize that not every play is going to go for 30 or 40 yards and take what the defense is giving, because right now defenses are giving him a four-man pass rush and they're playing coverage behind it, and you need to read the defense and find the most open man and operate your offense accordingly.
The Ravens match up with the Chargers. Suddenly now Lamar Jackson's shown the ability to come from behind. What's changed with the Ravens that they're actually playing pretty well when they get behind big?
Well, it's really the growth of Lamar Jackson, and I've been hesitant to give him a ton of credit for the passing game over these years that he's played, even though there have been some people like, see, he can pass. Well, some of these performances, yeah, he's throwing the ball, but he's throwing it over the middle of the defense. You know, he's throwing it close to the line of scrimmage. He's not making those deep passes down outside the numbers or toward the sideline and driving on some of these routes to fit it into a tight window like some of these other preeminent pocket passers. But his last outing, he was doing a lot of that, and it was really, really impressive. And so I think they're learning to trust him more. I think he's giving them reasons to trust him more in this passing game, and I think that's been a big reason why this Ravens offense has taken a step forward.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Rich Ornberger. You can check him out on Sunday. The Chargers beat the Browns. They're taking on the Cardinals. Cardinals went out and added Zach Ertz. I don't remember them throwing to tight ends much, but maybe this changes. But what are your thoughts on the Browns, a team that scored 42, and yet OBJ wants more targets, and all of a sudden can't stop anybody?
Right, right. Well, the Browns' biggest issue right now is they're so hurt. They had, as of yesterday, 17 players on the injury list. And, I mean, they're running into a buzzsaw right now with the Cardinals. I mean, they're red hot offensively. They've scored 31 or more points in every game prior to last week's win over the 49ers. And this Cleveland defense has carried the Browns to a good number of victories so far this season, but they're banged up. I mean, they're missing pass rush, and that has been really the key to their success earlier this year. So, unfortunately for the Browns, I mean, unless they have the bodies to throw at Kyler Murray, I mean, this is just going to be one of those situations where it doesn't matter how good your plan is or your scheme, it's a personnel issue. You know, are you going to be able to run with Kyler and this offense? And I think the answer is no.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the answer is no. But we'll see. we'll see. I mean, obviously, what they're going to try and do, I mean, when you're without your top running back, but they have a great depth there with Kareem Hunt, I mean, you know, they're going to try and keep Kyler off the field. But we'll and I'm sure they'll try and keep him in the pocket. And when he gets out, that's when he's so explosive, and he can throw from so many different angles. I mean, he's really incredible. It's going to be fun to watch. Rich, great stuff. Can't wait to hear you on Sunday. Remember, that's Sunday, 1 o'clock Eastern to 5 o'clock Eastern. So the games are going on. Get in your car. You turn on Rich, and he does an incredible job, not just telling you what's going on, but why it's going on. It's awesome. It's Fox Football Sunday right here on Fox Sports Radio. You're the best. Tell Steve Hartman we said hello, and we'll talk soon.
You got it, Doug. Thanks, man.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Every Friday at this time, I make you rich. I give you my picks.
We got them. Five NFL, five college.
Five on three. One, two, three.
Five. It's five for five with Doug Gottlieb.
Let's go, five.
All right, let's start out. It's supposed to be west, but it's really in the mountain region, right? Utah and the Beehive State. They're a pick'em with Arizona State. We did have Herm Edwards on earlier in the week. Arizona State has kind of stabilized themselves after losing to BYU. They beat Colorado, they beat UCLA in the Rose Bowl, and they beat Stanford just last week. The one thing they're not getting is great production from Jaden Daniels, the thrower. He's been more of a runner. He's their young star quarterback. Utah, meanwhile, they're 3-2, but they're undefeated since Cameron Rising got the job as the starter. So I think Utah is a much better team than their record because they change quarterbacks. I think they're at home playing an altitude against Arizona State. It's a pick-em game, so I just think Utah's going to win. I'll take Utah. A couple of huge games this weekend. Michigan State, maybe the surprise team in all of college football. They're undefeated. They beat Rutgers 31-13. Western Kentucky only beat Nebraska by 3, smacked Miami, smacked Northwestern. This is their fourth road game already of the season. They're taking on Indiana, the one-hit wonders, who are only 2-3 on the year. Michigan State has a legit Heisman candidate at running back. Like, legit. Jordan Simmons is big time. I think they're a team that is tremendous, tremendous in terms of how they've been kind of coming together, right? So, excuse me, not Jordan, I said Kenneth Walker. Kenneth Walker III, he's got 9 touchdowns already on the season, 913 yards. Remember, we're 6 games in, so he's well on his way to 1,700 yards or so. Michael Penix Jr., who's the star quarterback for Indiana, tore his ACL last year. He's been a shell of himself. 4 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Meanwhile, Peyton Thorne for Michigan State having a great year. So I'm going to take Sparty to win this game. By the way, it's also 48.5. I'm going to double up. Michigan State and the under. Michigan State and the under. Texas A&M's taking on Missouri. Texas A&M fresh off of their upset of Alabama. They're a huge road favorite at Mizzou. And while you might say, well, that's a trap. You just beat Alabama. You celebrated. You're paying $100,000. Missouri in 2 SEC games gave up 35 to Kentucky and 62 to Tennessee. And A&M's better than both. A&M's going to smack them. I think their defense is elite. I think their offense obviously came along last week. I like A&M also and the under. And the game of the week is Georgia taking on Kentucky. It's a 44.5 point spread, a 44.5 point over under. I like the under. I think Georgia wins. I don't know about covering 3 touchdowns and a half point, right? But I think that Kentucky will run the football, and that will shorten the game, and I don't see them getting to 44.5 in the over-under. Those are the college picks. Now let's get to the NFL. Chargers-Ravens. Ravens had a big comeback win. Ravens are at home. But the Ravens do have a short week. The Chargers have beaten them previously in this building in the playoffs. And while the Chargers had a arduous game against the Browns. It did give them an extra day to prepare, which obviously they had to use to travel. But the Chargers have played a higher level of competition than the Ravens. Remember, Ravens had to come from behind and steal one against the Lions and against the Colts. Chargers are elite. I think the Chargers go on the road and win. So I'm getting 2.5 points. I'm going to take the Chargers on the money line. This one feels like a trap game for the Dolphins. Dolphins get blown out last week in Tampa. Now they got to go to London to take on the Jaguars. I don't think the Jaguars are particularly good, but obviously last week was a mess with all the Urban Meyer stuff. This week, they got a chance to get it back together. I'm going to give the Jaguars to get their first win of the year. Packers taking on the Bears. Aaron Rodgers owns the Chicago Bears. It's a 6-point line. All they have to do is win by a touchdown. Give me the Packers. The Colts look good on Monday and then gave one away against the Ravens. Obviously, not having your kicker. Now they know that going in. Colts minus 10. Give me the Colts. Patriots are taking on the Cowboys. Cowboys are a 3-point favorite. Cowboys are an immensely talented team. But I like what the Patriots are putting together. They got Jamie Collins back. That'll help get them some pass rush. This one, to me, the over-under is 50.5. I like the under in it. Really like the under in it. And the last pick of the weekend is, I think, an easy one. Steelers-Seahawks. Steelers are a 5-point favorite. Steelers were dominant last week. That was one of my picks. And this is, I know Geno Smith is playing close to West Virginia where he went to school, but that team is so widely dependent on Russell Wilson, I can't pick anybody else. I will take the Steelers. Those are the picks.
Five on three. One, two, three.
Five. There it is. Five NFL.
Let's go, five.
Five college. Five for five with Doug Gottlieb.
Boom! Doug Gottlieb show here on Fox Sports Radio. Was it or was it not a swing? Right. Was it or was it not a swing? Gabe Kapler said this on the check swing heard around the world.
Not been one to talk much about umpire decisions, but that final check swing call seemed as if it really angered a lot of people. What were your thoughts on that and how'd you see it?
Super tough. I mean, obviously, you don't want a game to end that way. I know these guys work really hard to make the right call, so it's super challenging on our end. Obviously, it's going to be frustrating to have a game in like that. But pretty high-quality hitter at the plate that can climb back into that count. It's no guarantee of success at the end of the at-bat. It's just a tough way to end it. There's no need to be angry about that. I just think it's just a disappointing way to end. There are other reasons we didn't win today's baseball game. So that was just the last call of the game, and yeah, that's enough.
Okay, let me ask you, John Ramos, as a very neutral party.
Wait a minute, hold on. I was just telling this to Jason. I said, I may be a fan of the Dodgers, but I am really logical when it comes to baseball. Baseball, because baseball is my first love, and I watch tons of baseball games. Dan always tells you, Doug, he always says, what's John doing? He's watching preseason baseball games. So I'm not just like just a random Johnny-come-lately person, so... I'm really logical about things, but go ahead.
By the way, have you noticed that Ramos pronounces baseball the way that James Earl Jones did in Field of Dreams?
Baseball and Valentine.
Baseball, Ray.
All right, so go ahead.
Well, I don't. What was the question? Was it a swing? Was that your question?
Yes.
I would say 50% of the time it would be called a strike, and 50% of the time it would not.
I don't know 50% of the time. I'm not willing to go there.
Not I am.
There. Yeah, well, I know you are. I know.
I've seen that swing hundreds of thousands of times in games, or not thousands, but hundreds of times through the course of time. I would say that half of the time that he would be called, somebody would ring him up, and the other time they'd just go safe, and that we would just move on. The thing that I heard too, and it's a bad way to end a game. So if he does check a swing and he does make it a strike, that's a bad way to end the game too, isn't it? I mean, if it would have been a strike, if he would have actually went, if 90% of the country said, yeah, you know what, he went, I would still say that's a pretty crappy way to end that series. Yeah, it is. It is a crappy way. Unfortunately, that's part of the game. There is a check swings. Umpire is asked if it's a strike. He chose to call it a strike. Game's over. I don't know what you want to say. I don't see any other answers to, man, I wish they would have ended that game differently. Okay.
Well, I mean, I think, okay? I believe that it's just more, I agree with the idea of you don't want to necessarily end games like that, but if you're going to end on strike three and he goes at the, like you're, it's considered a swing. It's a swing and a miss if you consider it. I just think we walk ourselves down a path that we can't walk ourselves out of. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm with you. I'm with you. But I don't know if everybody else. Jay Stu, again, another very, very neutral party.
what do you think? And by the way, in the 6 to 8 weeks I've been here, I've never seen Ramos so fired up. Both excited that the Dodgers are advancing, and he's so upset at this other side of the argument. It's been entertaining to watch. I think I have more of a measured way of looking at this. I think we got away with one, and we're not the first team to get away with a bad call. It was a judgment call that went our way, and I'll take it. And let me ask you this, Doug. If the Dodgers had, say that check swing was not called a strike and he hit a home run, I don't think the Dodger fans would be like so upset at that call. In other words, it could have gone either way, but I think it was just a bad call. In other words, you know, the Dodgers would not have been upset if we would have lost that game and that check swing wasn't called a strike. And that's kind of how I look at it. It was a bad call and we got away with one and I'll take it.
All right, Isaac, what about you?
It was clearly not a swing. I mean, it was clearly not a swing on replay. especially when the first base umpire himself tells the pool reporter after the game that he admittedly got the call wrong. I'm sure he feels horrible, but like you guys, I mean, we've all watched a million baseball games. We've all watched the replay of that low angle on check swings, either from the first base side for a righty or from the third base side for a lefty. And a lot of them are really too close to call. This one was not too close to call. He did not swing.
I thought he swung. I thought he clearly offered at the ball. That's what it's called. It's called offering at the ball. Like, his hands go through the plate. But I also understand that all baseball people are like, that's not usually called a strike. Okay. It's like a travel that's not usually called, but it is kind of technically a travel. So, it was an 0-2 count. It's reasonable to think he was, you know, he saw some in the zone and then it dropped out of the zone and he tried to pull it back right on time. But I will give credit to all the baseball people. None of them has said in truth, he hasn't swung. It's that that's not usually called. That's the difference. Make sense?
What would you, if I know you kind of brought up the traveling call, but is there anything about, I would consider it be like if you're driving to the basket in basketball for you, Doug, and a guy fouls him and ball, and it, you know, goes in at the last play of the game and they're like, that wasn't a foul, and half people are like, oh, is that something you would, something close to being like that, like a foul, or is that not really the same theory of a check swing? Like a foul that happens at the last play of the game.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. There's all kinds of people like, you don't call that there. You don't end the game on a free throw. Like, okay, but if he fouled him, he fouled him, right? So yeah, I'm with you there. Completely with you, Ramos, on that analogy.
By the way, Gabe Morales said, I have no idea what Isaac's talking about, but Gabe Morales says, I don't have the benefit of multiple camera angles when I'm watching it live. When it happened live, I thought he went, so that's why I called a strike. Okay, that's a pretty valid point. I don't know what...
That's a judgment.
When did he say I made a bad call or I made a mistake? Did I miss that part, Isaac, in there?
I read the same quote that you did. He seems to be saying he got it wrong.
Oh, that's...
Where did he say he got it wrong?
If he had it right, would he say, oh, I didn't have the benefit of multiple replays?
None of us have the benefit of multiple replays. Who has the benefit of we do after the game's over, but he doesn't. It's just,
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying that
he doesn't say that's not what he says there. I'm sorry.
He's very clearly saying.
It's not clear.
I mean,
not.
If you were the umpire, would you say, yeah, you know, it's tough because you don't have replays. You say, look, no, and he went around. His bat clearly broke the plane or whatever. He would explain his rationale, not say, oh, I saw. Look, there was a pool report in the Cowboys Chargers game a couple of weeks ago, and the official spelled it out. Here's what I saw. Here's why it was a penalty from the pool report, and these are rarely done. But he wasn't asked, I suppose, but he didn't describe. Hey, the bat crossed the plane or his wrist turnover or I saw that. He didn't explain why his rationale was that he called it a strike.
Because it's just a quick bang-bang judgment call.
Exactly. It's a bang-bang judgment call. Bingo.
It's different than a technicality.
Yes.
Notice how I flipped our Dodger fan into being sympathetic here. That's what we call reverse psychology.
Yeah, I don't see that one, Isaac, and I don't see him apologizing for getting the call wrong here in any quote. So I'm gonna go with team Ramos. By the way, here's Cody Bellinger on the go-ahead RBI in the ninth.
Cody, the stuff dreams are made of for you. How many times did you play out that moment in your backyard as a kid?
A lot. You know, you really do want to be in that moment. He's got really, really good stuff. So I was down two strikes, and you know, I just try to stay within my approach. I felt good the previous three or four pitches I saw. I just missed them, and that time I just, you know, stayed a little more simpler and got the job done right there.
Discover matched all the cash back you earn your credit card at the end of your first year. It's amazing because Discover's accepted 99% of the places in the U.S. to take credit cards. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen Report. Limitations apply. Of course, it was Isaac Lohenkron who said Cody Bellinger would have the biggest impact in the game. All right, coming up next. Ooh, we got a lot to get to. Including the ALCS begins tonight. Got to pick a winner. We'll do so next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're doing well. Mm-hmm. Every day at this time, we get you caught up on all the stories of the day. We call it The Press.
The Press.
Isaac Lohenkron, what do you got?
This first item is an eyebrow raiser. So Ramona Shelburne did a deep dive on the Ben Simmons saga in Philadelphia, which included the following anecdote from the morning of their Game 7 loss to Atlanta in the playoffs last spring. Simmons was held out of the team's shoot-around due to a possible exposure to a team masseuse who had returned an inconclusive COVID test. Several players were questioned about whether they'd seen the masseuse that morning, but only Simmons said that he had. According to multiple sources, many within the team questioned whether Simmons had actually seen the masseuse or was just trying to get out of playing Game 7 as he battled the basketball version of the yips.
That's dirty, right? Listen, I've been in that place where you're fighting your brain. You're fighting your brain. It's a really hard thing. But I don't think he was trying to to get out of the game. I could be wrong. That's a major accusation.
That's about the worst possible accusation you could accuse an athlete of, aside from being on the take, right?
Right. We're throwing the game, yeah.
All right, so from that story to a more uplifting item, the University of Rhode Island Rams football team out of the FCS have started the season 5-0. They play tomorrow at Towson, which is outside of Baltimore. Today, the Rams boarded their buses for what they thought was going to be a nice 8-hour bus ride to Towson. But they were in for a surprise because New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft loaned the team the Patriots' custom team plane, and Kraft picked up all the expenses. So here they are, an FCS team, and they got to fly charter to a game on the custom team plane of an NFL team.
What's his connection with the school?
Actually, they had some travel issues, and they actually reached out to the Patriots to say, hey, maybe could we rent your plane? And the answer that came back was not okay. Just, hey, you can rent the plane, but we'll loan it to you, and we'll pick up all the expenses, the fuel and all the travel expenses, so you can have it for free.
Okay.
I thought he was like an alum or something, or honorary degree or something.
Right.
And now he's got under. Now they'll name now they'll name a building after him.
Their next home game will be played at Robert Kraft Stadium. Be careful, the paint's still wet.
Right.
All right, next item. We kind of touched on this yesterday, Doug. You had Game 5 of the division series between the Giants and the Dodgers, which the great Vin Scully called beforehand. Yeah, you're damn right, you better applaud. The biggest Giants-Dodgers game ever, but it was going up against head-to-head the Thursday night football game between the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Super Bowl champions, and the Philadelphia Eagles. Well, the ratings are in, and I believe, thinking back to yesterday, you had this one pretty much dead on in your prediction. The Giants-Dodgers game got 6.5 million viewers, and the Buccaneers-Eagles game, 14.4 million viewers. So the NFL more than doubled the ratings of the deciding Game 5 of the National League Division Series.
Still pretty good for a West Coast game on TBS.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
And that was, what, a 9:07 Eastern time start. Yeah, that's a good point.
Nine.
NFL item, a guy who played in that game, Zach Ertz, even caught a touchdown pass for the Eagles last night in their loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Well, today, he got traded to the 5-0 Arizona Cardinals. He is off into the sunset of the desert. Won't play against Cleveland, obviously, on Sunday because he just played on Thursday. Huh. But the NFL's only undefeated team has itself a new weapon.
Hasta la vista.
Yeah, I'm interested in it. I thought that I think Zach Ertz has handled this about as well as anybody can handle it. You know, when they said he was traded to go back home, and he was like, "This is home." He's done it. He's done a really good job. Am I the only one who's like, wait a second, the Cardinals don't use tight ends.
Okay.
Huh?
So.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, they have seven on the roster before this, right, in training camp, and they've struggled to find one.
Seven.
And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how they use him. Does he get the football? Obviously, he's a good player, and Keim loves him. Kingsbury said, I've heard nothing but good things about him. I just don't know how they're going to use him within if he'll be used and be nearly as productive as he could be.
That's pretty cool.
Even though the Tampa Bay Buccaneers won last night over the Philadelphia Eagles in that game, 28-22, they continue to get just more and more shorthanded. Newcomer Richard Sherman appearing in just his second game with the defending Super Bowl champs. Yeah, hamstring injury early in the fourth quarter. He did not return, headed immediately back to the locker room, did not play the rest of the game. Well, today, Richard Sherman tweeted, "Disappointed, going to bounce back soon. Asked a lot from my body in a short amount of time. Will be back better."
With a growing injury.
That means it's bad. Close. That means he'll be out for a long time.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
One more item, just an official note. The Seattle Seahawks placing Russell Wilson officially on injured reserve. And what that means is, what's notable about that is that the earliest he can return is going to be week 10 when the Seahawks will be facing the Green Bay Packers.
10.
That's in Green Bay. Remember, we were talking about the games to go to, and that's if he comes back that early. Their season may be lost by then. Hey, get out there and press.
That was the press.
All right, ALCS starts tonight. Houston is going to host the Boston Red Sox. So, Jay Stu, who are you rooting for?
The Houston Astros better win this series because the Dodgers are going to win theirs. And it'll be an incredible World Series narrative and filled with vitriol, and I get a chance to make fun of the Astro fans again.
Okay. Isaac, do you agree with that? Look, Lance McCullers being out, I think, is big, right? He's going to have to – he missed the entire 19 season with Tommy John surgery, and he's not even on the active roster. So that's a big one for them, as this Red Sox offense has been mashing, absolutely mashing.
Unfortunately, emotion is ruling me over logic. I think I'm doing exactly what Jason Stewart did. Instead of wishing that the Astros would lose to the Red Sox, I'm actually rooting for them to beat the Red Sox so they can be annihilated by the Dodgers, assuming they beat the Braves, in the World Series. It's like following someone on Twitter just so you can unfollow them.
Okay, that's one. Ramos, you want to see the Astros?
Sure. Yeah, Astros would be great. Red Sox would be great. But both Red Sox is just because they're just like a heritage team. In 2018, the Dodgers have faced the Red Sox and the Astros in the last two World Series, you know, besides beating the Rays last year, obviously. But yeah, both are great. I'm good with both of them. So, but you know what? Atlanta, good luck to you as well. We're just putting the Dodgers into World Series. I never like to do that stuff. So there's an NLCS to be played, and we'll see. You have to win four.
Yeah. I mean, does anybody really think that Atlanta's going to win this series?
Probably not, no. But you still have to say that, though.
What? Why? Why do you have to?
I don't know. Just to be gracious, you know?
Yeah. Max Fried, who's an LA kid, he's going to get the first start for
very good
Braves.
Pitcher.
Very, very good pitcher. I think the Braves are good. I do think there's a level of confidence for the Dodgers where now they've kind of seen their own blood. They've seen their baseball lives flash before them. By the way, I like Clemson tonight. Taking on Syracuse, I think Clemson's offense explodes tonight. I like Clemson. We were Clemson playing on Friday night. Nobody cares. Have a great weekend. We'll be back Monday. This is the Doug Gottlieb Show.